Matt,
Yeah, I don't know. Where
what
do we go?
the fuck? Sorry.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, this is a JREP session. We haven't had one of those for a while now, so good to have the entire team back for a change. Yes, that's right, Emil, Blanca, Tracy, and Matt, like you've never seen him before. Don't miss this one. I won't spoil the surprise, but if you're listening to this on audio, you might want to check out the video too. We'll link to it in this episode show notes. But aside from that unrelated tidbit, we actually have a really good conversation on Akias for you today, and on the new government initiative that was enacted a few months ago, which now allows realtors to charge a minimum commission even for super cheap properties. Is that a good thing, a bad thing, and what was the reasoning behind it? Which of course also led us to discuss, as we've done here so many times before, the issues with buying these dirt cheap Akias. So we also talk about, when does it make sense to buy with the purpose of a complete renovation in mind? About the incorrect assumption that many buyers have as to how easy it may or may not be to simply buy cheap, slightly renovate or not renovate at all, then list the property on Airbnb when not in use. Spoiler alert, it's a lot harder than you think. We also talk about best practices for short-term stay rentals, when a licensed management company might be required. We talk about Akia concierges, which is a really fancy name for a job that's actually not as fancy as it sounds at all. And then we have a discussion about the bidding and the offer process in Japan. Is it ever a good idea to overbid? Are there any other ways to get a seller to prioritize our offer over other potential buyers? How deposits work, and just how common or uncommon auctions are in Japan. So a really interesting chat on a very popular topic or set of topics that I think you'll probably find interesting. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side. Recording is in progress. The Japan Real Estate Experts panel is back in session and with an almost full house. There we go. Matt. Oh my God, where's your beard? Matt.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where what do the fuck? Sorry.
What the facial hair?
Holy crap.
Who's the little boy?
Yeah. What's up, man?
Are you looking for your mommy?
Wow, you look so clean.
I know, isn't it weird? Respectable, even.
Good to have you back. And Tracy's supposedly joining us in about 10-15 minutes as well. And we were just talking about what we're going to talk about. And it's good that you jumped in, Matt, because that's a topic that's probably close to your heart. We've mentioned it at the summit. But to those of our listeners, viewers who are not there or haven't viewed the videos, there has been a legislation passed in July 2024, July this year, which now enables realtors to charge a minimum fee of the same formula that they've been charging, which is 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax, starting at 8 million. So even if the property you're purchasing is less than 8 million yen, you will still pay your agent a minimum of 300,000 yen or 330,000 yen, including tax. And the main reasons that I understand, but please correct me if I'm wrong, for this legislation is because when they were just making 500 or $1,000 for a property that they may or may not sell at the end of 3 months of hard work, and they just were not working to sell that property, which means that those dilapidated IKEAs just remained as they were for decades, right?
Yeah, that's true. I consider this a step in the right direction.
I don't know if I'd say I'm like optimistic about it, at least near term. I think like in the like the adoption phase, I'm willing to bet is going to. Yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes. I don't know if I'd say I'm optimistic about it, merely because often there's a disparity between basically like what, like theory and practice or legislation and practice. And so now it is possible for what, below 8 million to still charge a certain amount. But maybe not psychologically, but like the damage has kind of already been done to the standard model or the standard practice, which is, well, we've never touched them before. Like, we don't even bother thinking about, even though something has changed.
Yeah. But look, just to jump on that. So what is it? At 8 million yen it used to be 30%, 3% plus 6,000 yen plus tax. I think for properties over like, 3 or 4 million yen was what it would be. So now, if an agent is selling a property at like 2 million or 3 million or 4 million yen, they can still charge the commission as it were an 8 million yen property. Was it 300,000 yen equivalent?
300, yeah.
Yeah, so they're making 300,000 yen now per property, even the ones under 8 million yen. I think that's great. So I get a lot of inquiries for like, cheaper properties in and around Tokyo. And I tell people now, look, 70, 80 million yen and above is kind of what I work with. Not just for the commission stuff, but also the kind of property that people are looking for doesn't exist so well in the area that I work with. And probably if it's like a 40 million yen or 30 million yen property, which is what, about 200,000, 300,000 US, it's probably hard to really find a good one that people would like in this area for my kind of clientele. Now, I'm, also looking for sort of old place like a beach house near Onjuku in Chiba area. And I've been working with local agents there because a lot of that one is local knowledge. Like the area I'm looking at, there's like 4 or 5 established agents that have been there for decades. They know who lives in every area. They know every transaction that's happened in the area. And a lot of those don't come onto the websites, right? Or maybe there's no urgency or real sense or push from the real estate agent when someone wants to sell it, because there's no money to be made. 100,000 yen, why would they put the effort? But now that they can make 300,000 yen, maybe, even if it's, a 2 or 3 or 4 million yen property, they're still going to make something that is significant. I can see a lot more properties coming to market, or a lot more properties being advertised, and a lot of agents putting real effort into supporting the sale of these properties. So when you're on when you're trying to find one as a buyer, I think there's just going to be more supply pop up. You have to pay the commission for it, but I think that's better. It's better than the property not existing or not being publicly available.
But what would you say? I know what I say, but what would you say? I know you don't deal in these properties, but if you had a customer saying, well, hang on, I'm buying a 2 million yen property, and then what, I need to pay like, 20% extra just to the agent for helping me buy it, kind of thing?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. They didn't help you buy it. The deal would not be done without them bringing that inventory to the light.
Yep.
Right? That would forever be hidden. I've, like, now in my search for properties, when you're trying to deal in some of these old rundown places, maybe they're, listed at 5 million yen, 6 million yen, and I want to make an offer of 4 million or 3 million, half of what they're asking.
Yeah.
Right? Because, sometimes these old dilapidated places, you have that kind of buffer because they've been on the market for 3 years and it's just sitting there rotting. But I I've told the agent, look, I'm still going to pay you the same commission as what the full price is. So by negotiating, by trying to get it cheaper for me, you're not going to lose out on commission. I'll still pay you the extra, like the full amount. I'm happy to pay for the service because, you know, a few hundred thousand yen to get the property that you want. Because remember, finding the right akiya isn't about saving a 100 or 200 or 300 thousand yen, right? That extra service fee gets you a much nicer property because the akiya are a bit of a crapshoot. I feel it's like you can get, there's a 2 million yen property here and a 2 million yen property there, and they can be completely different. One of them kind of, wow, like it's got new, like, you know, just so much stuff nicer about it. Still priced the same, but better location, better view, better road access, so much stuff about it. Maybe much bigger lot of land. They're both essentially worthless.
From a tax perspective, yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, but from, like, you know, typical, like, 2 million and 3 million is kind of the same difference, really. Mm. But by paying the agent a little bit extra, you're able to have an opportunity to find a much better property.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm inclined to tell agents, find me a, like, put some work into finding me a cheap one. I'll still pay you the current, you know, whatever higher rate that you want. But please do the work for me. We can close the deal. Fantastic. If I can get a great beach house, right now I'm looking, they're like 10 to 12 million, right? For the ones that make sense. If they can come up and, you know, they're working on a 12 million yen deal with me, I'm still on the fence about it. And if they can show me one that's 4 or 5 million, I'm like, excellent. Thank you so much. I'll still say to them, look, I'm happy to give you the, you know, the commission equivalent to kind of the other deal that you were.
Well, if it's a 4 or 5 million yen property, though, then you'll have to pay Blanca or someone like Blanca another 10 million to bring it up to livable standard, right, Blanca?
Yeah. Yeah. I think people don't understand one thing. But the cheaper they buy, the more it's going to cost to actually live there or be able to use it. And people don't understand it. And then they buy and they'll go like, oh, but how come that we bought this for like 3, 4, 5 million and you are asking for 10?
This is the bizarre thing about akiya.
There's a kind of a twisted logic there. Same with the commission. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm budgeting like 10 to 12 million renovation on a large property. Like this is, so I've got that in my head. It's not, you know, but when you're spending another 10 million on renovation, the base structure needs to be really good. And I don't mean the foundation. Yeah. Like the real foundation, you know, I love what Anton does. He reconcretes the foundation. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. And you can redo it, but you can't really make it a lot bigger. You can't, it's hard to make it two stories. It's hard to change, give it a view, right? There's lots of things that you cannot just add to it or do to it. That's why I think I'm happy to pay a bit more and or in commission just to find a one where the base original structure is good and the location is good.
Yeah.
And then I want to spend my 10 million yen renovation on a property where the location and the view, all the stuff that you cannot renovate into it, are fantastic.
Absolutely.
And that's where I think, the agency commission or the extra top is, I need them to work. They're the specialists in that area. Work extra hard for me to find me that sweet one, and I'll pay you for it.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model,
as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
But you're not lazy. First of all, you're not lazy to do your job for you. You understand what you're looking for.
Hi, Tracy. And then
you also, hi, Tracy. And you understand the kind of, balance between the price and then, what it's going to need. But most people, they just have no idea.
Yeah, because I think that's what I'm going to label this video, the reasonable approach to IKEA purchases and renovations. Because but it's true. Most people don't get it. They think they'll buy something for 20,000-30,000, like I was saying before we recorded. Pay another 5,000 and it's renovated and good to go, right?
And the worst part is that then they'll get angry.
And then some videos came out. You can buy a house in Japan for $500, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, they're out there.
I mean, people keep sending me those listings, and like yes. Matt was saying, they get angry. Like, what? It looks fine in the photo.
Yeah, and my friends are all sending me messages like, "Oh my God, Blanca, we can buy houses in Japan for $500. That would be awesome. Then we can come and see you anytime we want, and then for the rest of the time we can be renting it out." And I'm like,
"That's the other thing. Yeah, we'll get to Tracy in a minute and go on." Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it's actually not that easy. How much time do you have?
Also, bizarrely enough, the Airbnb stuff comes up often, but rarely does the incorporation of a business to actually conduct those business activities, right?
Well, what they're thinking, mean, Paco, half of the year don't need a corporation, right?
No, don't need it. Technically you don't, but like I'm not a tax person or anything like that, so I'm not sure what the implications would be for a non-resident to be earning income. Because you can actually get your income paid offshore, and if you live offshore, so I don't understand how that would work. So not being a tax person, yeah, my specialty is hospitality, making lots of money, and helping you have a really great helping people have a really great business. But the actual machinations of the business and the taxes and all the rest of it, because there's so much cross-border stuff, I'm just gonna say above my pay grade.
Tax-wise, it's doable. There's no big issue there. But you mentioned a few times in Emil too, I think, that if you're gonna be applying for a license, might as well apply for the Yokan license, right?
Hotel license.
Absolutely.
The hotel license, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you're going to be not so there's the different types of minpaku licenses. There's owner occupied, there's the one where you're not present, or there's room shares, right? So there's the couple of types of minpaku. But if you're not going to have a gym in here registered at the same address, then you need to have be contracted to a minpaku kanri. So that's a property manager who will be in between the guests and the government, right? So they're the ones who are going to be technically on the phone if something happens in the middle of the night. So you have to have a contract to get the minpaku license if you're not going to have a jumin-hyo at the residence, even if you own it.
Just for the listeners, a jumin-hyo means like a registered residence. So I'll summarize what that means, because I know what you're talking about, but just so someone off the bat who doesn't understand, if you have your primary residence and you want to rent out one of the rooms whilst you're still living there, or, you know, the room below it, or a little, you know, rental studio in the same house that you live in primarily, then you don't need to engage a third party rental management company, like Minpaku management company. But if it's not your primary residence and you don't have a resident, like you don't have your registered residency at the address, by regulation, you must have a third party, you must engage a property management company like what Tracy is doing. And that's when you're going to, what, 20 to 30, 35% is what the property management fee is. So for these Akia type holiday homes that people want to buy and use, you're going to have to engage a third party
a licensed third party,
and not all. Right. I mean, you know, a lot of people ask me to be their property manager, not in Tokyo, and I know Ziv, you know, but I in good, I mean, I could technically have my name on the document, but in good conscience, that's, you know, I couldn't do it because it means that I'm actually responsible for the, you know, the duty of care, the health and well-being of the human beings who are sleeping under your roof. And I take that duty of care very seriously. And also the way I run my hospitality, the way I run my business means that I'm a really hands-on, or, you know, my team are really hands-on and making sure that the guests are really having, you know, a really great time. They're not bewildered. They're not going to be running amok in the neighborhood. They're sorting their trash. They're being good local citizens. So I don't feel that I can do that remotely. And I'm not someone who just phones it in, because also I believe if you're not really engaged with your listing and you're not really engaged with the market, then you're leaving money on the table. And so if you're in it for making money, if you're in it as an investment, just chucking it up on Airbnb is not really, you know, you're not getting the ROI that you should be getting.
And so, also it's gonna stuff you and your reputation. It's like Matt was saying about attending viewings, right? If you put your name on something as the person representing this owner or this buyer, whatever the case may be, and then you stuff up because, you know, something happened, and then you get the bad reputation for it, right? Mm-hmm. Very selfishly, yeah. I wouldn't do it as well.
And I think to riff on what Tracy's saying, I think that, you know, conducting yourself in this manner that we're talking about it's a good way to, what's the right word, like vet other people coming into it. If you're just focused on cash, kind of regardless of stuff, then you can sort of say, hey, first come, first serve, or whoever can come in or whatnot. But if you have stringent protocols that tend to be more expensive as well, then you're filtering out the potential for, you know, bad actors, free radicals, whatnot, so that your product is good.
All day long, I 100% subscribe to that.
Mm.
Yeah,
and also it's better for your property, because if you've got bad actors in the property, it's going to be costing you a lot more in maintenance, in repairs, in, you know, God forbid, sort of total destruction. Relationships with neighbors. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So. And this is, I mean, look, there are plenty of ways to run a business, and there are other people who do lots of other things and like go forth and prosper. Happy for you to do that. It's just, this is not the values that I have. No shade on how other people run their business. It's just that I don't, like, it's just not the systems that I've got set up in place.
Can I just jump in? And I want to go back to the previous topic about fees and commissions.
Sure.
It's funny. Last night I was having a conversation with a friend. He reached out to me and said, look, they're looking to buy this like Akia in Kansai, and they're going to go down today to visit it. But apparently there's been, you know, today's when they've, I don't know if it's today or tomorrow is when they're going to start the viewings. And they said they've got like four people actively like keen coming to go view. And they said, look, can we offer higher, offer more, or can we give them an extra sort of commission to how can we sweeten the deal that they choose us versus the other parties, even though the listing agent has already said, look, if there's more than one applicant, we're going to do it like a lottery type system. And so I'll share sort of my two cents of what I said and how the application process works. Again, I don't have much experience with Akia, but there's a few different things that you can do. And this is what I told them. If the person has already indicated, like the agent has already indicated they won't accept an extra sort of consulting fee or extra kickback for them to choose you, which happens in the industry, then the other option is just offer more. Even though they said, look, we're not going to accept higher, like we don't care about higher offers. We're going
to
do
it. Oh, they will forward it to the seller, you think?
But they will afford the applicate, because when you apply, you know, if you've done it many times, you provide an application, your name, your address, the property information, and then your offer information. And the offer is not just the price. It's the price, the deposit, the contract date, the settlement date, and any other conditions. For example, if you want to do an inspection, or
you're offering 20% deposit instead of 10.
How much? Yeah, what the deposit is, how much, if you're going to use financing or not. So in Tokyo, often we use financing. So whether or not the loan is subject to financing or is it a full cash purchase, all that stuff. So in that, you know, when you present it to the seller, I think there are ways to make it a bit sweeter. So one thing is to offer a higher deposit, and the norm is 5%. Now that's, again, in Tokyo, we do that. So in a 100 million yen property, it's about 5 million yen. Now, if you're doing 5 or 10% on one of these Akia,
we interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah. Matt, we've got you. And Ziv, yep. You've got experience as well. With a property that's like 2 or 3 million yen, what's the percentage for the deposit that people put in?
Nobody's paying deposits.
So they sign a contract and they do contract and then purchase, or they go straight to purchase and on the one day?
Contract.
We've got both cases. Some of them like that. Yeah, definitely that there's no deposit and signing and settlement are done on the same day. But sometimes there is, and then it's kind of the normal deposit, I think, 10%. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, usually in Tokyo we do 5%. And the reason we do 5% is so on 100 million yen property, you put 5 million yen deposit. And the contract says, usually either party can cancel, but you forfeit the deposit. So if I put a 5 million yen deposit and I've changed my mind, I can cancel the contract, but I forfeit my 5 million yen. If the seller wants to cancel, they have to return your deposit, but they also have to give you the same amount as a penalty cancellation fee. That's why I tell people 1 million yen is just not worth it for a 100 million yen property, because the seller doesn't feel comfortable, because you may be willing to change your mind and just lose that million yen. Or the seller as well, maybe, you know, they've got a daughter that's just come back from university in the US and they want to come live in Tokyo and they want the apartment. Then they may just cancel and say, so I'm going to give it to my daughter. So they'll just, you know, bail out of the contract. I haven't really seen it happen, but that's why a substantial, you know, 5% is enough skin in the game to have like not want to cancel. However, with these Akiya, it's, you know, if it's a 2 or 3 million yen property, putting a few hundred thousand yen is not really a lot of security. People are willing to cancel for a few hundred thousand yen if they find a better deal. So I said to them, look, in that case, maybe say you put 50% commission. You know, 5 or 10 or 20% is the same thing. Say, look, I'll pay half now and then half on settlement or whatever time.
You mean deposit, not commission. You're not paying 50%.
Pay 50% deposit, not 10 or 20%. To make it attractive, 50%. And I said, and you can also increase the offer. I think this was like a 4 million yen property. And they said, oh, should I make it 4.1 million, 4.2 million? I'm like, you know, maybe make it four and
maybe
a half.
Like five. Yeah.
And make it 4.5 or 5.
Mm.
Make it attractive enough that even though the seller and the agent have initially indicated we're not going to accept higher offers, we're going to do a lottery system. There's a certain amount that's like, oh no, that's too much to leave on the table. The sellers look, as much as I can be honest and fair with everyone, I want the extra million. Yeah, that's a 25% increase. And
so I would be very curious to hear how this pans out, because they're likely working with the what's the right way to say it? Like the worst of the worst. So in Kansai, one reason I don't do very much business down there, at least for cheap properties, usually sub 10 mil, is they have what's called the Akiya concierge system. Have you heard of this?
Nope.
No.
It is the worst thing ever. So, and the reason I suspect this is you're talking about the lottery system. So the, just like how Akiya banks are where real estate goes when no agent wants to touch it, so is the Akiya concierge to Akiya banks. Oh. And which is, yeah. And so there's like, I don't know if middleman is the right word, but basically the Akiya bank has said, oh no, like, not this one sort of thing. And so then the Akiya concierge comes in. I've dealt with these characters. And so they're across the board. It's in Shiga, Osaka, Nara, and what am I forgetting? Kyoto. And their main offense, I think, is that when you ask for visitations, their practice is that it goes in order of reservation. And so, like, Emil, if you call them up and say, hey, I like property A, but I'm really busy this month, I want to visit, you know, November 15th, can you book that? And they say, oh, yep, okay, great. And then I call them right after you hang up and I say, hey, I like property A and I'm actually standing right next to it right now. Can you please come over and give me a visitation? They'll say no, because
not until November. Yeah, I know.
till the 16th.
Yeah.
And so that is, I'm curious about how this works out, because it's a major, what, headache.
Yeah, we had to wait 4 months. We had to wait 4 months on behalf of a client who wanted a viewing just because they had that ridiculous system.
Dude, I've seen like more than a year long waits on like 3 million yen properties.
Yeah. When the idea is to sell as many of them as quickly as possible to get rid of the dilapidation, right?
Yeah. This one, fortunately, my understanding is, you know, they've got 4 people coming to view it like this week. And depending on the offers that they get, they're going to do a lottery or not. So so it sounds like it's not in that sort of particular setup that you're talking about. That said, I did say, look, sweeten the deal, add a bit more, 500,000 to 1 million yen more. on the price, make it a bit such that it's a bit hard for them to just ignore.
Mm.
But then you don't know, are you going to end up in a bidding war? But, you know, if you want the property, then pay for it.
I'm curious, actually, if you don't mind me asking, if you go into a transit, or at least if you submit an offer that is more or less like a blunt force, okay, here's the listing price, but I want all these other people out of my way. Here's an extra, you know, ridiculous amount on top of it just to land the deal, land the property. Does that ever backfire? Like, they get the property, but for example, maybe, you know, the neighbors and whatnot are aware of how you went about acquiring it, which is to say, just like moneyed everybody else out of the conversation and just overpaid for it because you wanted to get it done.
In the few occasions where we actually had a neighbor that even knew that the property was for sale, because a lot of the Japanese sellers will not share that information, it's considered very private. The sellers were insanely aware of the fact that we might be talking to someone and constantly told us not to talk to any of the neighbors. So I don't think that's information that will leak out, but I could be wrong. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's akiya-mart, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
I can't imagine paying more for the property would upset neighbors that you came and you just loved the place so much that you paid more for it. No, it will upset other clients, but my expectation as an agent, so if I'm an agent, I'm representing someone selling and I get two offers for the same property and one has, you say I get an offer and it's a bit higher, I have another party interested, I'll let them know that's what the higher offer is. And that's where it's at. But I'll also speak with the seller as well and say, look, this is what's happening. The seller may, I think the agent is more the hurdle than the seller. The seller probably wants the most amount of money. So I can't imagine the seller knocking it back. What I can believe and I have seen is a seller's agent, not accepting or not, I think they're probably not
passing on the offer. Yeah, I've seen that.
I have seen that. Yeah.
Because they don't want to deal with the headache. For them, like in Tokyo, say it's 100 million yen property. Someone offers 101 million. Then it becomes 102 million. Then it becomes 103 million. For an agent, this makes no difference in commission.
Very small, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a lot of headache and a lot of muck around with the seller and feels like, and then also the seller will no longer have confidence that it was priced right if there's a bidding war.
Yeah, yeah.
So the agent may stop it and say, look, we're not going to do that. Of course, if an offer of 10% increase, 110 million, 105, 110, something significant, then yeah, that's worth passing on. It's too much to not. But just a little portion is probably not worth it. So I can imagine the agent being the neck there.
Plus, the agent being Japanese and Japanese being as conflict averse as they tend to be, I don't think the agent wants to deal with having to tell the other potential buyers that somebody came in with the offer and hang on, but why didn't you ask me? I would have offered. Yeah. I don't think they want to be in that situation.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so they just, look, let's just keep it clean. They, and they've said to me in the past, like, look, the seller has agreed to sell it at this price. This is their asking price. So they're the offers that we're accepting.
Yep.
Right?
Yes. That's it. Yeah.
Because there's no incentive for this seller's agent to accept more.
And I kind of like that. Like, while I mean, on an individual case, it seems to be, oh, but I really wanted this property and now I can't get it. But if you look at the grand picture and the grand scheme of things, it's better that we don't turn into this overbidding auction kind of environment where every property ends up selling, you know, with a lot of frustration and stress at like 1.5 times the original price. Like, do we really want to go there as a country? We've got a pretty stable property market with reasonable prices. I don't want to turn it into an auction fest.
Like Australia.
I was going to say like Australia.
Yeah.
You know, and then we'll have like, you know, reality shows of like million-dollar properties like Okinawa. Like,
how much can we get for this one?
You bought Okinawa.
Yeah,
so they do the same thing in Czech, and it's ridiculous.
What, the bidding war?
Yeah,
and but you know, is it just a pissing match? I mean, I look, I don't know. Like, I'm not a real estate agent, so but is it a pissing match? Is like who can actually get the highest comps, or who can get the highest per tubo like in the district? But it doesn't.
It turns
seem to
it into
sort of
like an emotional shit show from my perspective. I don't like it. Mm.
Yeah, just to have that toxicity of like competitiveness, but you know,
it depends on which side you are though, because I think also from the seller side, it allows you as a seller to get the maximum amount for your property, which is also fair. Like, what's the right number? You get one offer. Well, there's bidding. Well, you want to get the highest bidder. You don't want to lose because someone is on the, like, whoever wants it the most is willing to pay for it. Anything less than that, the seller is losing because it wasn't marketed correctly. And so in Australia, it's very much, that's the way the system is. That's the way financing works. You get pre-approved for a certain budget. People know what their budget is and they're willing to go up to that. And they start low. Hopefully they can get a deal, right? But that's basically the market dynamics. Here in Japan, we don't have the finance pre-approval into the same degree. So you can't have an auction sort of system because you can go for the auction, but then if the financing falls through, what, you're screwed, right? That's why you need the pre-approvals. So in Japan, the auction system won't work because, like, for, you know, places that need financing at least, because Japan doesn't allow for it. The Japan banks don't really allow for that system. And also Japanese are, you know, they want to know upfront what the expectations are. That's why agency commissions are kind of like government regulated. So that you know upfront, these are the costs that are involved as both a buyer and as a seller. And it's not just up to the agent to come up with their own fee structure for such a big thing. It's like, you know, it helps the agent. Like, how much should I charge as an agent? And how much should the seller and the buyer pay? Well, it's government regulated. We follow government guidelines. I don't even have to think about that. It takes no mental energy for me to think about my pricing, because it's government regulated. And I think these are the expectations. And so everyone knows the expectations meet when they come together.
An interesting conundrum.
Yeah. So the system and culture is different. And I kind of like how that is in Japan. But at the same time, there's no bidding war. The opposite happens. There's no discounting war.
Yeah.
Whoever comes first, it's like a reverse auction in Japan. Whoever comes first with the financing at the asking price gets the property.
I mean, they do prioritize a cash offer, though. That much does work. They'd rather accept a cash offer, even if it came in second place, rather than wait for the first place to maybe or maybe not get their financing.
Correct, but not if it's a lot cheaper.
No, I know. All things being equal, same price, I mean.
Yeah. So Japan's more reverse auction. This is the asking price, and you can wait 2-3 months and it might drop. You can wait a little bit and it might go down, but someone else may snipe it at that price. That's also the risk.
Another thing we tell people, like somebody looks at the listing and tells me, oh, it just dropped in price, can we offer less? I mean, no, if it just dropped in price, you better offer that price and as quickly as you can, because it's going to be gone in a minute.
Precisely. sorry, lovely people, I have to jump off. I've got a viewing in half an hour. It's been fantastic having everyone back on.
Yay, it is.
Yeah. Just show your face for a second to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
We have the early sales. Look at how clean he is.
He's so clean.
Gorgeous.
This is very handsome.
It is. Yeah, we can actually see how handsome you are now.
Yeah. I like the beard. I like the rough look.
You know, I first grew my beard because when I started doing this job, nobody wanted to give me money because I looked too young. Now I kind of got used to it, but
yeah. Yeah, I get that when I don't have a beard, so I understand your pain.
All right, well, great having you all on again today, and see you again soon. Yep.
See you again soon. All
right, talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye. Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
So there you go. Probably more than you ever wanted to know about the Akiya market here in Japan, but mostly it was just really nice to get the entire crew back together, and you'll be able to see us all again live in person or via streaming for 2 entire days in our next Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo, which we've just started cooking up for you again in April 2025, which sounds far away, but it's actually just about 3 to 4 months away as of the publishing of this recording. Details coming soon. Watch this space. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners, so feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.